Our first speaker is going to be Joe Lovett. He's the producer of the documentary Going Blind. That documentary, if you haven't seen it, it's about his own very long-standing battle with glaucoma over 20 years or more, as well as the stories of several others also coping with low vision and one with no vision. Joe is a patient of Dr. Robert Rich, and he also has taken a non-invasive alternative current stimulation treatments in Germany with Dr. Fedorov, who is also on the call. And he's had remarkable results, and we'll have him talk a little bit about that. After his remarks, Dr. Anton Fedorov will speak. Dr. Fedorov developed this technique in its basic form and used the first prototype of the instrument at the Human Brain Institute in St. Petersburg, Russia, between 1991 and 2005. Currently, he's at the University of Magdeburg in Berlin and continues his work there, as well as at EBS Technologies. And so they'll both speak approximately 30 minutes each, addressing the questions which you have written in. Just a couple of the mechanics of the call, the way we're going to run it. This teleconference is actually the fourth in a series of FitEyes teleconferences. When we intend to do more teleconferences, and look forward to many interesting topics. As I mentioned, both speakers have been given lists of your written questions, and then they will address what they can. We will give the time to Joe Lovett, talk about his film and about this therapy. So Joe, go ahead, take your time.
Sure. A lot of people ask how I happen to do a film like this. And I am a filmmaker. That's what I've done all my life. I used to be at ABC News as a producer at 2020. I did a lot of health. I did a lot of stuff on the AIDS epidemic. I tended to like taboo subjects, things that people were afraid of touching. And when I've opened my own company about 20 years ago, it's we're called Lovett Stories and Strategies, and you know, we have had rather our website is lovettproductions.com. I've had glaucoma since I was in my early 40s. I'm 67 now, or I'll be 67 next week. And as my vision was starting to get worse, appreciably worse, I really wanted to know what was going to happen as I lost my vision. How would I deal with that, and et cetera, because there was no question that my visual field was diminishing. And my doctors were sort of loath to discuss that at that time. You don't want to hear about that. Oh, you don't want to talk about that. There's no reason to talk about that. That's not going to happen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is something that I've heard over and over and over again from other patients. And it's a bit disempowering. You're really not allowed to be an advocate for yourself. But anyway, I wasn't concerned about advocacy. I was concerned about what I was going to do about my vision. So I start to talk to people on the street. Now, I always helped people, you know, who needed help getting across the street, who might have canes or dogs and might be a busy thoroughfare. And so in offering somebody my arm, I would say, by the way, do you mind if I ask you some questions? And quite frankly, the answers that they responded with my questions of, you know, how did you lose your vision? How long, over what period of time did you lose your vision? You know, at what point did you decide, did you have to use a cane? Do you live independently? Were you able to keep your job? How did people treat you? You know, what has your love life been like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The answers were quite remarkable, and I realized that I had been living in a parallel universe to people with vision loss, and I knew nothing about their lives, nothing whatsoever. And it really shamed me a bit that I was so totally ignorant. But their stories were so fascinating, and they were so kind and generous in terms of helping me understand what was happening to me and what might continue to happen to me, that I thought, this is interesting not just because this is happening to me, this is interesting because no sighted person knows anything about this. So I decided to make the film. We shot a little bit. Filmmaking's expensive, and we shot a little bit on our own dime, and then put together a trailer, and then showed it to the Reader's Digest partners, showed it to a number of places, but the Reader's Digest partners for Sight Foundation decided to fund us, and Pfizer Ophthalmics decided to fund us. And then we got foundation research also from the National Eye Institute, the Allen Royce Memorial Trust, the Rudin Family Foundation, Allergan, a number of places, and a lot of individual donations as well. And the film took about 5 years to make. There was the film, for those of you who haven't seen it, the film basically takes my medical history over a period of 5 years and my sort of struggles to maintain the sight that I have medically with my desire to find out, you know, how I'm going to make it if I do lose the rest of my vision. And so we sort of take my storyline as a clothesline, and on that clothesline we hang the stories of other people who are in different stages of losing their vision and how they have coped very admirably and what they have gone through, the process that they've gone through. Somebody mentioned in the questions that were given to me, why did you use the title Going Blind? It's so negative. I used the title Going Blind because I'm going blind. And whether I go all the way or not, I don't know, but I'm going blind. Blind is not a dirty word. And I think that there is such a prejudice, such a fear of blindness that it turns into a prejudice. And I think that when we start to lose our sight, we tend to turn that prejudice against ourselves. And I think there's no reason not to use the word blind. And I didn't want to paint a silly, rosy picture. It's not a rosy picture, losing your vision. And it's something that's very, you can lose your vision and lose it, if you will, and live successfully. And have very, very successful lives. But it's difficult. I didn't want to, you know, paint it with a brush that was really, I thought, would be using false coverage. Actually, there was one of the conferences that we went to in our research. We met some doctors that were doing some fascinating stuff. And I asked if they would participate in the film. And they said only if we changed our title, because going blind was so negative. And quite frankly, I think when somebody says that, they reveal a prejudice that has to be examined. After the film was finished, we showed it at the World Ophthalmology Congress in Berlin in 2010. And there was a party for me after the screening, and Anton's colleague Bernard Zobel came up to me. He had been presenting at the conference as well. And he was a friend of friends, and he had been alerted to the film. And he came up to me, and he said, introduced himself, and he said, you know, we're working on something rather interesting that might help you. Totally experimental, there are no guarantees, but it's something that you might be interested in trying. And that was in June 2010. And I, of course, said absolutely, because nobody was offering me anything restorative in the States. And I went to Germany, and I started the treatments, the alternating current treatments with Anton and Bernard. Before then, though, a lot of people have said to me, in particular, one retinologist sort of summed it up. He was I had a retinal tear, and he was examining my vision and had me dilated, looking at my optic nerve. And as he looked in, he said, "Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. This is just horrible. Oh, my goodness." And I said, what are you referring to? And he said, "Your nerve damage is just extraordinary." And I said, okay. And he said, "I just can't believe that you can walk into a room unaided." And I thought to myself, is that good news or bad news? And then I thought, well, I'll take it as good news, but I won't ask him what he thinks. But many people have said that the only reason that I function as well as I do is because of the care that I've had. So I've been with Bob Rich for over 20 years. He has always offered me clinical trials to be on, the latest drugs, vitamin supplements, and things like that. And, you know, I like to think that being diagnosed early and having somebody who was willing to try things on me has made a difference. Someone asked about my trabeculectomy. I've had three trabeculectomies. I've had one in my right eye that was very successful and continues to be, And that was about 15 years ago, I think. And then I had one in my left eye that was unsuccessful. And then the trabeculectomy that you see in the film was done about 5 years ago. Now, that didn't seem to be too successful either. But afterwards, Bob did a needling on me, maybe a series of needlings, actually, and which he had done after the first bad trabeculectomy. And none of the needlings had worked before, and I was loath to try it again because they were so painful. But the second time he had, there are different ways to go about doing it, with the introduction of 5-FU and before the needling, et cetera, et cetera. And it worked. It brought my pressure was at 16, and I was continuing to lose vision. We brought it down to 8. And that seems to have slowed things down, although I do continue to still lose vision in my left eye in particular. My right eye is pretty stable. When after we showed the film in Berlin at the World Ophthalmology Congress, we've made it available for organizations. Oh, by the way, our website is goingblindmovie.com. That's goingblindmovie.com. And that has an enormous amount of information on it, which you might be able to use. But we've made the film available to all sorts of eye organizations, medical schools, resident training programs. And the film's been shown it has been bought by about 200 organizations. It's been shown all over the world multiple times by each organization. The American Academy of Ophthalmology is using it for a residency training program to make them aware of low vision therapy. I had never heard of the term low vision therapy while I was in treatment, and I only heard of it because a friend's father was being treated with low vision therapy for macular degeneration in Florida, and I said, "What on earth is that?" And my friend said, "Oh, it's a therapy that helps you to use the vision you have left." And my father, who was quite blind from her father, who was quite blind from macular degeneration, got tremendous benefit from it. So I asked Bob Rich about it, and he said, "Well, we don't offer it, but you can go to the Lighthouse." And at the Lighthouse was the first time I truly understood where my scotomas were. I drive, I ride a bike, I read pretty, I read fine, use my computer fine, especially at that time. Although I had, I tripped every so often, I have a lot of lower hemisphere loss. When the low vision therapist stood across the room from me and she covered one eye, she had me cover one eye, and she said, "Stare at my nose with your open eye and fixate on it and tell me what you see of me." And I said, "I see your face, I see your neck, and then I see your hips. I see nothing of your mid-body." And she said, "That's where your scotoma is." And I freaked. I never had any idea that I had lost that much vision. And I didn't understand how I was able to see as well as I did and get around as well as I did. And it was explained to me that, because the way the vision loss was happening in both eyes, my stereo vision sort of compensated for a lot of the loss. And that also that I naturally scanned, and that if I was not someone who had scanned, that they would have taught me how to scan. And that's one of the reasons why I'm able to use my vision as I do. I was devastated to realize just how much vision I had lost. And the next day at my psychotherapist, I was a wreck. And I spent the session, a 60-minute session, sobbing uncontrollably. I was literally unable to speak. At the end of the session, I walked out her long corridor and out her front door, and as I walked through her front door, I burst out laughing. And the reason I burst out laughing was for the first time in 2 years visiting this therapist, I didn't trip on her front step. And the reason I didn't trip on her front step is that the low vision therapist the day before had explained to me that I didn't know where my feet were, that my brain was telling me that they were someplace that they were not. So that when I walked through a doorway or down a flight of stairs, I had to exaggerate my look down until I literally saw my toes. And then it would be safe for me to walk. So with that little bit of knowledge, I walked through a door without any problem, a door that had always been a doorway that had always been a problem for me. And I laughed because I felt capable of handling myself and realized that with this kind of training, I could continue on, you know, quite well for quite a while. Another revelatory moment was while I was making the film, and I was at the Heinz Blind Rehab Center in Chicago. There, one of the therapists disclosed to me that he himself was losing his vision, and I asked him about his fears and training for the future, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, "Look, Joe," he said, you cannot be worrying about the future all the time. You have to deal with what is and what you have. He said, yeah, things will get worse and you'll deal with it. But right now, you deal with what you have and you enjoy your good vision and you watch out for your bad vision. It's what Jessica Jones, the star of our film, said to me when I first met her. She said, you learn to use what you have. So when I do have hits in my vision and things get worse, which is I sort of compare to a cancer patient who's doing fine and then, you know, all of a sudden she, you know, drops to a different plateau. Devastating, but then you get used to it. And I think that's what I've done. I think I've stopped being devastated. And maybe I'm kidding myself, but I basically say, oh, that sucks, but I still can do this, that, and the other. And I think that's really important for getting on with. We're going to be having a congressional screening of the film in September, hopefully at the Capitol Visitor Center. And that'll be a preview screening before the film is released on public television in October. Now, it's being released on public television station by station. It's going to be made available to them by an organization called NETA, which is the National Educational Telecommunications Association. But the local stations pick it up at their own discretion, and they air it at their own discretion. So it's helpful if people can alert their public television stations to the fact that the film will be available to them and try to get their station to air it. We're also hoping that stations, the film is 80 minutes, they have you know, blocks and, you know, 1 hour, 2 hour blocks. So we're hoping that they'll fill out the rest of the hour with a panel of local people who can tell the audience what the resources in their neighborhood, their community are. And that would be extremely helpful, I think, to people to know about low vision therapy, mobility training, any kind of clinical trials that might be going on at universities. And also what ophthalmologists and optometrists, you know, were available to help people, especially helping people who perhaps don't have the money and are holding back from getting treated. Let me just go through some of these questions and we'll go on to Anton. How's my vision been since? As I said, my right eye has been rather stable. My left eye has continued to deteriorate, but since I've been going for treatment in Germany, that's been enormously helpful. I don't want to oversell it. I really don't want to oversell it. But what happened the first week of treatment, Anton was asking me to please note very carefully any changes. And I was at the ballet in Berlin, and I was reading my program, and suddenly I realized that I could read it with my left eye, with glasses and without glasses. And I wasn't reading with my left eye before then. And then I noticed that I could see the features on the dancers' faces very, very clearly. And I was not seeing features on anybody on a stage at all. And then that night, and this was really just about 4 days after the beginning of treatment, that night I was walking at Friedrichstrasse at home, which is a very, very busy street with a lot of oncoming traffic, and I noticed that there was no glare to the lights. That has sort of continued. The treatment seemed to have taken away the fuzzy glasses effect, you know, the dirty glasses effect. It sharpened some of my vision. My acuity has improved tremendously in both eyes, actually. I guess, you know, those are, and glare, the lessening of glare is amazing. I used to be terrible in an airport. I couldn't see anything, and I don't have those experiences anymore. Now, it seems to me that after treatment, my vision peaks at about 6 or 7 weeks, and Anton will tell you if that's typical or not. But at about 4 months, it starts to go a little bit again. It slips. It's still not as bad as it was, but it slips. And to some degree, I don't know whether I'm actually seeing. I feel like I'm seeing better, But I don't know if it's really that or if I'm just using my vision differently. It seems to me that the treatment that I'm getting in Germany is sort of a form of low vision therapy. It's a way to help you use the vision you have left. And one of the things they talk about, which we don't hear too much in the States, is residual vision. Where is your residual vision? You know, what neurons can we stimulate to make you see better? My goal in making the movie is another question, and that was, well, my goal in making the movie was I was learning new things, and I wanted to share that knowledge with other people. And I think if there's a message, the message is that going blind is not a dirty word, and that people can lead extremely productive and capable lives without vision. It's just one of our senses. I don't mean to sound Pollyannish about this. I certainly don't look forward to losing my vision. But I know that I can do it, and I know it will be difficult, but I know that I can do it. Would you consider making another movie that would delve into alternative approaches to preserving and healing vision outside the mainstream? Of course, but all sorts of movie making is dependent on funding. You can't do it without funding, and it was a hard road to get the funding for this, and we're still, you know, trying to fund the outreach so that we can get this out to as many people as possible. So what the films that we do really depend upon funding. That said, we are looking to do a film called Take a Closer Look, and that the funder that we had have said that she was giving us the funding for it has had some health issues of her own and really is having a hard time concentrating on anything else. But that we are looking for funding on that, and that would be a film that would explain how difficult it is for the partially sighted, how difficult it is reading a prescription bottle, how unnecessarily difficult it is to read packaging labels, how unnecessarily difficult the experience of a museum can be, or any other exhibition. And we're trying to make designers aware of how easy it is to make this easier for everybody and better for everybody, not just people who are officially partially sighted. What's the purpose of the Congressional of Hearing? We want legislators and their aides to have an idea of what the issues are that aren't talked about in the vision loss community, and so that when legislation comes up, they'd be better equipped to look at that legislation intelligently. Percentage of U.S. healthcare costs, I don't know. As a result of eye diseases, I don't know. I do know of wounded vets. Four times as many vets come back and from Afghan and Iraq wars, severe eye injuries, then come back with amputations. And I do know that only one-third of the vets, about 150,000 vets who qualify for low vision services, are taking advantage of those at the VA. And the VA has excellent low vision services. Mentioned the Going Blind Filmmakers' lack of funding for glaucoma research due to economic reasons. And this questioner was wondering whether the fact that many baby boomers are beginning to create an increase in the glaucoma population, if this will cause a shift in the economics, which will make such research and innovation more profitable. My soapbox is basically that we have to become greater advocates for ourselves and take advocacy away from a number of the people who perhaps aren't doing as good a job as they could be doing. I cut my teeth reporting on the medical world during the AIDS epidemic. And during that time, I was introduced to young men mostly who were in danger of dying from this horrific disease that nobody knew anything about. And they said, hey, listen, business as usual, this is not won't work for this disease. This is a roaring epidemic, and forces, economic, political, social service forces, research forces have to be brought to bear on this epidemic to fight it. And they became part of the fight. So, and they did a remarkable job, so much so that now, a few decades later, this is a treatable, AIDS is a treatable disease, and often treated as a chronic disease, not 100% of the time, but often. You know, we've had blinding diseases for a very long time, but what happens is that so often people who are losing their vision retreat to their rooms depressed. And as Jessica Jones said to me in the film, first started to shoot, she said, Joe, you shouldn't be shooting me. I'm not the face of blind. I said, what do you mean? She said, Joe, you shot me. You met me walking my guide dog, training him on my way to work, fully employed. That's not the face of blind. The face of blind is the person who knows nothing about services, either doesn't know that they exist or has is too depressed to access them, and she's sitting alone in her room, depressed and anxious, and she'll stay there for the rest of her life, totally dependent. That's the face of blind, and that is the face of blind statistically for well over 70% of people with vision loss, as I'm told. So we need to get those people out of their rooms and into the streets, visible, and make people know that they want to participate in their lives, and they can with the proper training and proper tools.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Joe. So we'd like to turn this over now to Dr. Fedoroff. Dr. Fedoroff, you'd like to take whatever time that you need, go over the questions, whatever you would like. We have a couple of other questions for you that have been emailed in since we started, and we'll hold those till the end. So go right ahead.
Okay, yeah, good day. I would like to introduce in detail these methods because I got so many questions, and I would like to divide these questions for three groups. The first group is definitely dedicated to how method works, what we exactly doing with the patients, how patients feel during the treatment, and what kind of changes we could expect after the treatment. Second part of the question is, of course, related to the intraocular pressure, because lowering high pressure usually is a big deal for glaucoma patients, and participants had strong interest how ocular pressure also could be react together with current stimulations. And third group of questions related to the further trials and questions how participants or patients could join trials, and also some personal questions about some diseases and some perspective for the method. And I would like to start from the beginning, just give some short overview of the method. We use alternating current stimulations. It's quite different because usually in the West, using direct current stimulations, mostly for the experiments and less for the treatment. We exactly reach the level to start to treat patients with alternating current stimulations. And right now, existed two big trials dedicated to glaucoma. First trials were done in Russia in Human Brain Institute during 7 years. And for about 400 patients were evaluated and treated by us. And I will later give some overview of this group. And second trial running in Germany right now, and it's about 40 patients, which involves double-blind randomized clinical trial. And let me, because I also saw that participants would like to know more in detail how, which, what group of patients was, and what kind of visual deficits they have, and how improvements was reached by treatment. And let me introduce the first study with 400 patients, which was done in Russia. And just I would, because I prepared some results and tables, and just give you some view of that. And mostly about 70% of patients had advanced glaucoma, because also it was patients with early, moderate, and severe glaucoma. Average age of patients was about 65 years, and lesion age was about 8 years, quite long. And, of course, patients with glaucoma usually suffered from visual field deficits, but, of course, visual acuity also could be involved. And we think for the effectiveness of the treatment, probably just make a very small switch to the treatment, how it works with patients. We apply transorbital alternating stimulations. It means we use four independent channels or four electrodes which are located around the eyes or could be put directly to the eyelids. And reference electrodes sticks on the arm of the patient. And we use two stages of our treatment session. It's diagnostic and exact stimulations. In unique diagnostic stage, we should define the optimal parameters for the patients. Patients should respond when they're able to see for sphenes or see the light. That means current applied transorbitally able to produce a sensation of light. And then we use tests for the frequency, which could be optimal, and then patients during half an hour received thousands of pulses, and they able to, during this whole period of treatment, keep this light sensation. And from this point of view, we definitely we make regional stimulations in the input, but then action potentials generated by ganglion cells, retinal ganglion cells, able to reach visual cortex and provide some physiological training effect, which could activate brain plasticity. And for normal treatment, we use 10-day stimulations period of time, and about half an hour to 1 hour patients need to be treated. And what's important to say that patients had very long history of his glaucoma, but they able to recognize some positive changes during those 10 days. It means method could definitely provide quite fast effect that patients able to recognize changes. And we, during our study, we measured visual acuity and visual field kinetic. We used a different method to measure visual field. But we, I would say, we divided patients like responders and non-responders. And after 10 days treatment, about 25% of patients able to improve visual acuity. But visual field was enlargement for more than 75% of patients. That means from 100 patients, 75 able to recognize the improvement. And of course, second question was how big this change, because, for example, we use threshold like 5% to a second patient as responder. And from our measurement, patient's average improvement or enlargement visual field size over baseline was about 28%. That's quite significant. And of course, its results were significantly dependent from glaucoma stage, type of visual field defect, and also it was found that correlation between visual acuity improvements and value of intraocular pressure. And of course, very big question: how stable these effects? By after 10 days, patients able to see better, but is it possible to keep it on this level, or effect could be very temporal? And our results and our follow-up examinations conducted after 6 months, because in Russia patients got two, three, and four courses of therapy, and each course we make after 6 months. It means follow-up in average was after each 6 months, and pleasure to say that more than 70% of patients keep improvement on this level without decreasing. It's so very important to say that. And of course, second question was how it works, because glaucoma, it's a multifactorial disease, and we know that only lowering pressure could not keep vision on the same level, because glaucoma is a progressive disease. And right now, many studies have shown that there is some other problems beyond the eye, because right now glaucoma could be seen as neurodegenerative disease when some neuronal lesions appear in the brain. That means vision loss is a result not only of peripheral problems, but also result from this neuronal degeneration in the brain. And our alternating current stimulations, first of all, works in the peripheral level on the retina, but then we have central effects and conducted together with AG. AG is a method to study brain activity, and we have confirmed that after our studies, after our stimulations, brain able to increase his activity in visual cortex and also in other brain areas which are responsible for the vision performances. And from this point of view, we had a good perception that glaucoma, it could be very interesting model to understand what we need to do with patients to improve the vision, because exactly current stimulations could activate neurons and then keep visual function on a new level. And right now, Joe said that probably because in his case, his improvements of enlargement visual field was not so huge and not so big, but exactly our quality of vision or his visual performances was I would say, changed. And that means exactly his ability to use his visual skills was increased after our treatment. Right now we make an opinion that several mechanisms are responsible for the vision improvement. Of course, first and more clear evidence is that our stimulations able to improve functional activity of retina ganglion cells and increase conductivity through the visual pathways. We have recorded visual evoked potentials, which also confirm us that conductivity or velocity for the pulses was increased during after the hour stimulations. But what important to say that our EEG study on also PET neurovisualization techniques revealed that more significant and dramatic changes appear in the brain, especially in the visual cortex, because alpha waves, it's remarkable and indicator of visual cortex conditions, show that after 10 days, brain able to get new functional state. And then also interhemispheric relations between our left and right hemisphere was increased. That means right now we mostly can say that we are able to stimulate brain plasticity, even to improve conditions of retinal ganglion cells. And of course, patients with glaucoma need to be treated not once, because what has shown by our study with us that repeated courses able to provide more profound and significant changes. Degree of responses also could be quite dependent from patient to patient. And right now I would like to switch to question to the intraocular pressure and our stimulations. Of course, we have contraindication criteria for our treatment, and ocular pressure more than 27 millimeters could be broader value to exclude patients from the treatment. But we controlled our ocular pressure before and after 10 days, and we didn't find any side effects from this parameter. But what I also learned from other groups and who apply some different techniques for the current stimulations in glaucoma patients, it was clear that sometimes ocular pressure was increased. In this case, we also pay attention to avoid any side effects with our treatment. But with our method, I would say patients never complain about some pain in the eye after the treatment. And probably it should be issue for the further studies to deal with ocular pressure, how it could be significantly interrupted by alternate current stimulations. And of course, it's important to say that our stimulations able to increase blood supply for the retina and then also for the eyeball, and potentially method has influences to mechanism involving for ocular pressure. And but I would say that our study also confirmed that method is safe and practically has no severe complications. Sometimes patients able to say about some temporal vision blurriness after the treatment, but it's always temporal, and after 10 days we had no decreasing of vision what patient has before the therapy. And now we are looking for organizing a new big trial exactly dedicated to the glaucoma. It should be multi-century trial in Germany, and also these positive changes from visual field, visual acuity, also gave us an idea to try to looking for the other other vision deficits like hemianopia, and we also right now have in Germany. Second trial dedicated for treatment patients after the stroke with hemianopia. It's early to say about effectiveness, but patient response confirmed positive subjective feedback after the 10 day of the therapy. And other questions could be related to what kind of other indications could be used for this method, and other origins of optic neuropathy, like trauma of the tumor, they are indicator for our treatment. And thousands of patients was treated in Russia with who has optic neuropathy with other origin. But glaucoma patients right now, it's our clear target to really recognize what is the optimal treatment could be provided to this group. And one of the questions was like, what is your vision of the future treatment of glaucoma? And of course, I would say always we're interested to optimize parameters, how to treat patients more individually. Right now, I would say a big issue for this area of glaucoma patients could be patients how earlier we can start treatment. And I have strong view that stimulations could be applied for the glaucoma patients as they diagnose it for the glaucoma. Because in this case, we had some clinical, some experimental trials with RETS model, and it was confirmed that earlier stimulations for the acute optic nerve trauma able to supply ganglion cells from the death. And right now, I have really good feeling that we need to offer for the glaucoma patients these early treatments to keep ganglion cells survive. And then, of course, we need to prove this concept by some clinical experiments, but experiments with animals had clear impact that stimulation is able to protect the ganglion cells. And maybe it also could be reasonable for the future to discuss some prevention therapy for patients, for future patients who have high risk to get glaucoma in future. And also, especially with Joe case, because he really introduced a lot of his personal experience with the treatment, we also gave some joint idea how treatment can be looked. For example, patients, right now we treat patients 10 days, and then they go at home for half an hour, half a year. But definitely to treat patients individually, we can offer some individual program for the patients, like more frequent treatment or like a permanent treatment once a week, once times a week, and so on. And of course, this method didn't abolish other convenient therapy. Of course, patients with glaucoma, they need to be under evaluations there, by ophthalmologist, because it's not allowed for us to exclude other treatments what patients have. And for example, I also got questions. Probably makes sense to don't think about ocular pressure if patients start to be treated by our method. I would say, of course, not. Patients should always be under control with eye specialists, and our method really able to stimulate, activate plasticity of the brain, and then taking together efforts from our side and ophthalmologists, able to provide for the patients more complete vision rehabilitation. Yeah, maybe it's what I would like to shortly introduce. And what could be the next step? I can read questions, but I not answer it yet, or it could be my message.
Okay, well, we could do that. We also have a number of questions that were sent in since we started, so maybe if you feel good about covering the written questions, maybe I can mention a couple of these and they will also cover. Here's one. What's the exact relationship you observe between IOP and visual field improvements as a result of your treatment? The correlation between...
As I said, we found correlation between changes visual acuity and IOP. but not visual field, because they are not correlated with this parameter. All of our patients had EOP below 25. In this case, there is no exact or clear correlation between both parameters. And maybe mostly exact result of the therapy, they depended on severity of visual deficits, of how small visual field, because patients with initial deficits just shown very small changes, because it's clear the visual system quite slightly disturbed and like a rigid. But in case of severe deficits, very like a tunnel vision or some very small visual area in the visual field, we found very significant and profound changes for this group of patients.
I see. So the related question is, if you see better visual field improvements with patients that are better controlled, and you said under 25 are the ones that you studied, but patients with better controlled IOP, do they have better results in visual field improvements?
Maybe it makes sense to just say usually patients with a low EOP, they may be under control to avoid any additional factors to worsening the vision, like a more stable condition. In this case, I would expect that our results after our stimulations will be much more stable than patients who has higher ocular pressure, and then they need to be treated more frequently. Or even they could not improve at all if blood pressure will practically blocked positive changes. And unfortunately, there is no exact value of blood pressure where we could not expect like no effects. But I would say that probably should be correlation between stability of improvement and EOP.
Okay. And what level of IOP is significant?
Yeah.
Is there a break point? I mean, you chose 20. The reading of 25.
Yeah, it was empirical. It was empirical value because we have some like a normal or like a before patients could be estimated as patients with high EOP, but we took 25 as a broad value for like be exclude or include patients to the treatment.
Mm-hmm. I see. Just an agreed cutoff. Other written documentation, articles and things that maybe you've written or others have written about the stimulation. I wonder if maybe we could get, after the conference at another time, maybe we could provide some links to some of that other articles, documentation. That would be helpful to our group.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Maybe we can do that
by
email.
It's right now method. Has written in many of manuscripts, and of course it maybe provides some more detailed overview of what simulations look like and how what kind of parameters was used.
Okay, wonderful. Is there a relationship between your non-invasive current stimulation and microacupuncture? Any relation there?
Practically it's of course, different approaches because acupuncture usually addressed to activate local points which are responsible for some energy like channels in the body. But our treatments are definitely focusing to activate thousands of ganglions. It's like we initiate through this retinal input, we stimulate whole brain to involve our specific visual system and not specific to induce the plasticity.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely, of course, it's different approaches.
Okay, thank you. And a related question someone asked about complementary treatments for your technology, hyperbaric chambers and other things that might be additional benefit.
Yeah, of course, I don't like extend method for whole areas of diseases, for vision diseases. Of course, our method has exact area where he works very well. And from this point of view, I would say optic neuropathy is the best candidate to, for us as a target to be improved. And other for example, also we had patients with amblyopia in Russia, and it's patients who has central deficits because eye is intact, and accounting that stimulations provide central effects like improve, activate central visual cortex. It's like our hypothesis. We also, but amblyopia patients have no visual field defects. They usually have only deficits with visual acuity. And it was confirmed that this part of patients able to be benefit from the ultraviolet current stimulations. And unfortunately, patients with retinal diseases could not improve with our methods significantly. It could be like a single positive cases or improvements could be very, very weak, be absent at all. Because, as I said, we use retinal stimulations as input to the brain. And if retina significantly lesioned, in this case, it will be limited our therapeutical approaches.
Okay. We have a listener in Europe wondering if this therapy is available only in Berlin, or if it be available in other countries in Europe or elsewhere?
Yeah, right now we finished our multi-center study, which was available in Berlin and Magdeburg and two more cities in Germany. And we expect that next year we will organize a new multi-center studies, and definitely few big cities in Germany should be involved in this treatment. But also right now we have one international project dedicated to hemianopia, and right now four countries, Germany, Italy, Holland, and Finland. We start our project in those four countries for stroke patients. And it seems to be, it could be possible, or it's also a very difficult question, but still it could be a discussed idea to use to have this trial for the patients with optic neuropathy for other countries.
Okay, and, good.
And maybe in the U.S. also.
And the related question is the approximate cost in euros for an individual, or is that covered by insurance somehow or not? It depends
on
the country, I'm sure.
Thank you for your question. Our primary target is make method available for patients who have health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be, it could be, in theory, it's not a theory, in practice it's possible because our history is 5 years. We are working in Germany to prove the method effectiveness. In this case, insurance companies will able to discuss with us the issue that methods could be covered by health insurance company. But if patients would like to get the therapy in private issue, difficult to say how it would be cost, but probably it would be cost more than 2,000 euros. It could be more.
Sure. Okay.
But not significantly more.
Okay, good. We had another question. If you could go back and talk a little more detail about visual field improvements. Did you say that it was about 70% of the participants saw improvements?
Yeah, we call this responders. It means from the 75% of patients able to recognize improvements of visual field, and it was confirmed by perimetry. Because it means they improve is minimum about 5% above baseline, but average improvement of visual alignment, visual field was about 28% over baseline for a whole group of patients. Of course, yeah, we have some distributions where for what kind of glaucoma stage or visual field defects improvements was better. But in average, in means, it was quite significant, or it could be recognizable improvement.
Okay. And then I think you said that after 10 days, there were no side effects. Or have there been some common side effects, common to most?
Yeah, I would like to know. Usually methods are good tolerated by patients. It's practically, there is no pain and quite comfortable because patients are able to recognize useful things. And concerning side effects, there is no significant side effects. Of course, some temporal complaints was like some headache, sleep disturbances, some blurring effect, some kind of tiredness, but usually it's not than 10% of patients have such kind of like a side effect. And usually it's always temporal, not necessary to use some medicaments to just relieve these symptoms. After usually always 1 week after the treatment, patients had such kind of side effects.
Okay, good. Is there similar research going on in the United States? Or not?
Right now, it's just only the discussion, you know, the idea to, maybe it could be possible to organize a similar study in U.S. with this like a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. But right now, it's not available. It's just our plan for the future and different.
Okay. One other interesting question. Determine the safe level of current. If the electrical current is too high, it could damage the cells, apparently, right?
Yeah, of course, we always pay attention to the value of the current. Of course, it's low current stimulation, because if we just, our highest value of current is 1 milliampere, and voltage is always below 10 volts. But it's like it's a maximum value. Usually patients need like a threshold value for the current to induce for scenes. Is about 400, 500 microamperes. It's about like a 5 volts. And plus we use these electrodes diameter about 10, 12 millimeters, and then current density not so huge, and in this case it's safe.
Good. I know Joe mentioned that he noticed a reduction of glare. Is that common among other patients, this experience of reduction of glare? So it becomes a real problem with glaucoma patients.
I couldn't say. Maybe Joe is maybe brilliant case because he just was so introduced so many details on his experience. Mm-hmm. And normally patients which are conducted by normal perimetric examinations or visual field, visual acuity tests, it could be not measurable, and we usually don't discuss in detail such individual features. But with Joe's experience, I would say it's not comparable. I did it difficult to say that other patients had the same effect as Joe, but in terms of optic neuropathy, because this effect all usually is a result of optic neuropathy, and I would say it could be reasonable that patients, other patients, able to have the same effect after the treatment.
Okay, thank you. What about patients with retinal detachment?
Yeah, in this case, usually it's patients with diabetes, because also always this retinopathy is a result of diabetes. And in this case, it is exclusion criteria, because unfortunately there is still a risk that our current stimulations able to provide further retinal detachment, and normally we exclude such patients from our from treatment. It's exclusion criteria.
I see. Okay. Well, that's important to know. There's a question about how long these treatments take. If it's done every day, how long does it take?
As I said, normally we need 1 hour for one session. Usually it's one hour, and the patients during the session have some small pauses to just make some exercise, open your eyes, but normally it's well tolerated.
The part of this question was that Joe saw no visual field, but he did see significant visual field improvement, right?
Yeah, it was, but I would say his subjective explanation of changes was for us so impressive, because he had a diary, and like every month or 2 weeks we received from his side some additional like a overview of his experience. It was so so really so interesting just to see how it could be, because they also published a paper, the 10-day stimulations improve quality of life. That means these changes are not related to machine, how to measure and improve its visual field, but exactly a question with quality of life has shown that patients translated these improvements to improve quality of life.
Good, good, wonderful. Let's see, here's another question. Hypertension, you mentioned hypertension, but you didn't quite understand what you said about it. This listener has terrible hypertension, severe retinal damage.
Hypertension, probably it was, because sometimes brain has conditions with, he has hyperactivity. Like, for example, seizures, if patient has a seizures, of course it's exclusion criteria to don't treat patients with current. Maybe, and...
But just and hypertension without seizure, then that would not disqualify someone.
Hypertension where? For example, if in brain, it's one side. If patient has high ocular pressure, it's also a very significant case to thinking to exclude patients from study. And right now, we make with our current stimulations parallel EEG recordings, these brain registrations of brain activity, and we're able to control any kind of hyperactivity which could be induced by current stimulations. In this case, treatments could be stopped or even completely stopped for those patients.
Okay, all right. The next question is there any way for the FIDEYES community itself to participate in these trials? We have a large group of FIDEYES members who own tonometers, measure themselves many times during the day. Is there a way for the FIDEYES to help in this trials and research?
There is an official way to join the trial, because all our trials, they are published in internet. There is clinicaltrials.gov on this site, and each trial should be officially introduced on this site, and the patients can get information about, for example, our activity on this site, because they can use Germany as a country, and alternating current stimulations is a method, and then they're able to see what kind of open trials is available to join, because all contact information, of course, present available on the site, and they can write a mail or even call us to ask for the details. And I would recommend for patients or persons who are interested for this method, just visit those sites. Or all institute or universities should officially publish information about the trial, and always exclusion criteria, inclusion criteria, exclusion. Primary outcomes, always in detail describe this information, and plus contact information.
Okay, good. So the website again is clinicaltrials.gov.
Yeah.
We have one other question. Here's the question. If people want to travel to Berlin and pay for private treatment, the approximate 2,000 euro cost cover the full 10-day treatment?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, that's for the 10 days.
The treatment should include, this payment will include all treatments, evaluations, and I couldn't promise to say about the final price because it's not public available for the patients.
Sure.
Maybe it will cost for 2,500. Could be different. But of course, this price will include whole things for the patient.
Okay, so then they pay for travel, lodging, all of those kind of things. This is for the actual treatment itself for 10 days.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joe, did you have another comment?
Joe, I just explained to our audience that your rich experience to explain your changes was very useful for us. For me especially.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really appreciative.
Right.
This way to explain physicians what you're able to say, because it's necessary to be known how it's going, how it goes.
Right.
And your way,
right,
I appreciate your activity in this way. Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. You know, I think it's important. You know, I would say that The changes aren't necessarily huge changes in your visual field, but they can be significant changes, especially if it's in central vision. Or, like, for instance, after one series of sessions, when I got home, I noticed that as I was walking down the street, I was aware of my feet, which was something that had not happened for a long time. And what had happened was that there had been an opening up in my visual field in my lower hemisphere. And we usually, at the office, at Dr. Richard's office, we usually were doing narrow visual fields, and we weren't doing the wider ones. And it turned out that the stimulation actually was helping the wider my wider visual field. I started to notice subtleties in the rise and fall of a sidewalk, which I hadn't noticed for years. So there are significant changes. But it's we're talking about neuroplasticity. I'm sure that's a term that Anton used. And so things change; they continue to change, and you have to just sort of go with them.
Good. And I think just to clarify the other question we were talking about before about traveling to Germany, taking the treatment, you mentioned this website, Clinical Trials, Dr. Fedorov. Is that how you arrange for that? How you you find a clinical trial from this website, clinicaltrials.gov, and then contact in that way, or does that work?
Yeah, of course. Are we able, for example, if even patient needs some questions about it to get some information, are we also able to get an answer? But counting if it's glaucoma patients and really need to be treated, of course I would recommend to visit this clinicaltrials.gov site and then just read or get some useful information about how it's going.
Anton, is that an NIH site?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll
because
post
all
that.
The trials should be published, yeah.
Going back to the person at the question about hypertension disqualifying for that, she wrote back and said that her hypertension is systemic only, not in the eye. So.
Okay, like a blood pressure. In this case, practically, it's not like a close the door to treat patients if he has very low blood pressure. But also those patients has a risk like a syncope to lose some concussion sense. It's like also typical things. In this case, we just need to pay attention on treating patients just as a physician, just simply be on the control, whole things, and time to time ask with patients and just, but not special. It's able to treat patients if his like blood pressure is quite low.
All right. Yeah, I'm sure each patient has to go through this selection process.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Here's another question. What nutrients do you think may be complementary to this technology, or if nutrients are complementary to it?
Of course, these biochemical mechanisms which are involving the response has a big interest for us. And fortunately, right now our process was focusing to make clinical proof for the method, and it should be our second stage to learn about this molecular level, how it works in to learn it systematically, what kind of changes could be responsible for improvements or to be non-responder.
I've been on ginkgo, I've been on turmeric, I've been on resveratrol, I've been on Namenda, memantine. So those are the drugs that Dr. Richards had me on for quite a while. I mean, not drugs, but the supplements that he's had me on.
Good. Here's a question, Joe, if you could explain your experience in a little greater detail regarding your visual field, particular improvements you saw, and especially in your central.
Yeah, I was losing vision in my. I've been losing vision in my left central, especially the lower left quadrant. And after the first go round of treatment, we really seemed to knock that back just a few pixels in the center, but that seemed to make a huge difference in my perception and my depth perception and stuff like that. That I've seemed to have lost that at this point. We're like 4 months. I'm sorry, about 6 months out of my last treatment. And I'm hoping that some of that will come back with my next treatment in June.
but it varies. You know, if you look at my whole visual field, it varies. But there seems to be a basic sense of improvement.
So does the improvement kind of retrace after a period of time? Do you have to continue to maintain
that
level of?
Well, I think so. It doesn't seem like as it retreats, it doesn't seem to go as bad as it was when I began. When I look at my journals of where I was before I started this treatment, it's hard to believe that I was that despondent, seeing that badly. So I think there has been a significant improvement, really significant, but there's a subtlety to it. And and I do think that you do need retooling, and my suggestion to Anton is that we do it every 4 months rather than every 6.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Okay, good.
But as much as I love Anton, I would love to be in the state so that and have him come here. I have to go unless if there are a couple of questions.
I think we're fine. Thank you very much, Joe. We certainly appreciate it. And as Dr. Fedorov said, you put the human side of it, so the analytical part, the clinical part, you add that subjective part, the effect it has on you, and that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you to everybody who tuned in.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yep.
Anton, I'll see you soon.
Dr. Fedorov, you know, this has been extremely interesting, especially to talk to Joe, who's been through this experience. Fidaz would really love to speak to other of your patients who saw results. If they'd like to join us for a teleconference and share their experiences, we would
yeah.
appreciate doing
yeah.
that. If you have somebody you could recommend later on.
Yeah, thank you.
Good.
It was a pleasure to join your conference and keep informed your guests what we're doing. And thank
good,
you.
Good. You answered this question about detached retina would disqualify someone from that. So the follow-up question is, could it be done on the eye that did not have the detached retina?
Yeah, of course. It's possible. In short, yeah.
Because stimulation is transorbital, so you could just do it.
Yeah, it's quite weak, but still we should always pay attention for various conditions of the retina. And we had patients who had an history of the attachments, and it was successful, but still always prefer to try to control risk as much as possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone in the trials have NTG with visual field loss in the center, and if so, did their visual field improve?
That would be normal tension glaucoma.
Normal tension glaucoma.
Low tension glaucoma.
Just recognize the deprivation of visual field. In this case, it exactly could be a case for our treatment because patients with normal tension glaucoma, they have usually they have no symptoms of no eye pain, and then didn't require lowering of pressure because it's normal. But still, these patients have silently they're losing vision constantly. And mostly this group of patients are recognizable as the patients who have exactly these neurons, these problems, and the neurons beyond the eye. And then stimulations could be exactly the case to treat this group of patients to improve the vision. And we had such patient in our study, normal tension glaucoma.
Okay, thank you. David, you're on the line. Do you have anything else you'd like to ask?
I just want to say, Dr. Fedorov, thank you very much. It's fascinating. You're doing very, very much needed research. And
yeah, thank you.
We look forward to having another conversation with you. Maybe next time you can share a little bit about, or even this time if you like, you can share a little bit about what got you started in this when you first had an interest and some of the personal aspects from your side. It would be very interesting for us to hear about. And there are lots more that we can talk about. We it's fascinating, and we really feel fortunate to have engaged with you.
Yeah, thank you. I can just very briefly just give you some overview of my personal way to start to use this method. And My first experience dedicated to this method is 1991. And when I was a student, I had some practice at the Human Brain Institute. And I worked in the laboratory of vision sensory systems. But the method was developed in the 80s when during brain operations, electrodes was injected into optic nerve, and optic nerve was stimulated with small currents during the operations. After brain tumor or even brain trauma, and then a few years later, it was suggested to use non-invasive stimulations, and I was responsible to develop new current parameters how to treat patients as optimal as they treated with open brain. And then yes, we use this method. Unfortunately, in Russia, we use it more like a clinical, it was not like a clinical studies at all. It was tended treatments. And right now in Germany, we really have a good organized trial, like double-blind, placebo-controlled studies. And it could be more convenient to prove whole things for the method. But this method was developed, as I said, more than 30 years ago, and it's quite big history.
Thank you.
Do you think, Dr. Federat, do you believe that there is room for significant further improvement through fine-tuning the frequencies or shape of the waves or any of the other variable parameters of the treatment? Do you, how much additional upside in terms of efficacy of your treatment is possible?
Yeah, of course. Unfortunately, the real mechanisms, how it works, is not so clear defined. And you're right, there is so many current parameters like frequency, pulse shape, pulse durations, and amplitude, which could be responsible for the improvement. And maybe one of the most parameters which are responsible for the improvement is amplitude. Because if we use very low currents, which has no foreseen effect, it could be not sufficient to get an improvement. And our first experience is start to use these threshold currents, which are able to sufficiently activate retinal ganglion cells. And then, of course, we had experience to apply different pulse shapes, different frequencies. And right now we are on the way during the animal experiments, to prove for each kind of pulse parameters the significance of change, and then we may be later able to exactly clarify which combination of current parameters could be optimal. But right now I would say amplitude is a crucial parameter to be to have success on this treatment, and also time of the session and number of sessions could be very critical parameter to make method individual.
Thank you. Jay, you have a comment or a question?
Yes, I just wanted to thank you again, Dr. Federer. It's been fantastic. And Terry, thanks so much for posting some of my questions. And Doctor, you know, Terry made a question about furthering this discussion because it's so interesting to all of our members. And also perhaps, you know, sharing some experiences firsthand, just like we did with Joe, especially with some of your patients, you know, if they could become members of FitEyes or we could get a separate call with them and you to talk about some specifics around, you know, visual field and the improvements and in more detail, that would be very helpful. And I'm wondering, with the detailed result, would you also have before and after perimetries? Are they part of the research that we can just go and have a look ourselves, or is it just statistically you've aggregated all the data?
Yeah, of course. And right now I'm going to prepare for the publications several papers about the glaucoma patients. And third one would dedicated this trial in Germany, and there were 40 patients with glaucoma, and they was in this also Verman placebo group, and of course we were able to provide statistics to exactly confirm the significance of change, and it could be not like a talk about the improvement, it could be clear evidence of how changes could be, and some relations or correlations depends on the initial severity of visual loss, or even glaucoma type, EOP, and other factors as patient age. And probably it could be done before summer or before autumn and the last time. And in this case, maybe next time we will able to introduce more scientifically our data to present some real relations for the pre and post changes for this group of patients.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. It would be very nice to see some of those, to see them, because all of us look at our visual field charts and we have a fair degree of knowledge and understanding about them. That'll have, and I had just one follow-up question, if I may, Terry, on this subject. So, Doctor, Joe talked about seeing improvements in his visual field around the center point, around the fixation point. Is that where you see the most improvements? I mean, when improvements, do they happen on the periphery, or do they happen closer to the central, to the fixation point? Is it quite statistically scattered, or is it random?
Okay, definitely not. It's not like it appears centrally, because we divided our patients group for patients with five visual field defects like peripheral constriction, central scotoma, arcoid scotoma, nasal sept, tunnel vision, and temporal islands, like temporal islands. And for each type of the visual field defect, we have found like a pattern of the improvement. And what was very interesting or exciting for us, we have found that for several patients, improvements has homolateral effect. That means, for example, visual field improve for the right side of both visual fields. That means it could be very clear confirmation that central effects are responsible, activation of visual cortex could be responsible for such kind of changes. And I have sent to them some examples. Maybe it could be published, or if you have like an interest to see the real examples how visual field could be improved, maybe it could be, Terry, can we share some results with our participants to present? But I would say visual field improvements not appear only in center. It could be in increase in peripheral areas, in like a nasal or temporal parts, or like top or the bottom.
Would you like to make some concluding remarks, Dr. Fedorov?
Yeah. I'm open to continue this talk for the future. I'm really appreciate to explain, to introduce further details, or even if you have some, we'll have some exact topic to talk.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we will do that. We'll continue to communicate with you and see what the future holds. Jay, did you have another comment?
I was just going to say thank you very much. This has been probably, this is the best example of the FitEyes community coming together and folks like this, empowering the community and the folks like Joe and Dr. Federer. And thanks very much, Terry and the team.
Thank you, guys, for organizing the conference. Thank you.
Good. Okay. All right. Well, then we'll end the conference.
Yeah.